Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford and Wes Hodkowitz from Packers.com, and we are at the Convention Center in downtown Indianapolis at the 2017 NFL Scouting Combine. Wes, the entire NFL has converged on this place for the next several days. It should be quite a week.
It is something, Mike. I mean, when you look at this place and just how it's expanded, we're no longer in that small room over at Lucas Oil Stadium. We're now in, as you mentioned, the Indiana Convention Center, as big of a convention center as I've ever seen in my life. And bringing in the fan experience into this as well. Obviously, everything's tricked out when in terms of the podiums and the availability. This event, it's amazing. When you go back to see what it was like even 15 years ago, how much it's changed, it's really something else.
Yeah, it's become not only a much bigger media event in terms of the coverage and all of the national, local website folks like us who are here, but then, as you mentioned, the fans are going to be able to run their own 40-yard dashes and watch some of the prospects do the bench press and things like that. This really is becoming a major convergence of sort of it's the off-season NFL event, really, aside from the draft.
Yeah, and I'm really interested to see throughout the course of these 3-4 days exactly how these prospects react to it, because, I mean, it is something to be doing a bench press in a weight room with every NFL scout surrounding you. There's still a lot of pressure involved with that as well, but, I mean, there's bleachers set up here. I mean, there's grandstands. It's something else to see exactly which direction that this thing is going, and for the, you know, a lot of personnel directors, I'm assuming they're really interested, too, to see how guys respond to it. I mean, when you're invited to the NFL Combine, it's the ultimate, really, accolade, and it's a testament to what you did in your college career. Now, as you try to get ready for that next level, this is a really big step to take.
Yeah, and it's a competition, really, in a sense as well. Now, this is just a piece of the pie, as they say, in terms of the whole scouting report that gets put together on an individual prospect. But there are over 300 guys who are invited here, and not all of these guys are going to get drafted.
Right.
There aren't that many draft picks. So there's competition here not only to get into the draft and perhaps get noticed and get selected, but then where are you going to be selected? We all know that factors into contracts and how much money guys make and all of that. So there's quite a bit on the line here.
Well, and the thing you think about too, Mike, as you mentioned, it's only one piece of the puzzle. There's a lot of stuff that goes into this thing. But how many times is it in a year or two years from now, you hear guys in their 40 times from the NFL Combine, how much that follows them? I know that's something we've had fun conversations with Micah Hyde about.
Yeah.
With him talking about, you know, how he feels like that didn't fully accurately really describe who he is as a football player, but
right.
Yet it does follow you. And then even the guys, I mean, you go back a few years ago, the name's escaping now, but the tackle, Terron Armstead, from, I think it was Arkansas Bluff or whatever that was.
Pine Bluff. Yeah.
I don't even know if it's that Division III or what it is, but runs a 4.7 140, becomes a third-round pick, and now has become a franchise tackle for the Saints. So this is where guys can really put themselves on the map, and I think even there's a couple different sponsorship opportunities out there, too, where you can own your own island if you run in the 40 in a certain time, if you break Chris Johnson's record. So a lot of stuff on the line for sure.
Yeah, and just to give the fans a rundown from a media perspective of what's going on here, over the next several days, we'll hear from coaches and general managers across the league. They'll all be having news conferences with the media, and then also all the prospects being brought in day by day, sort of by position group.
Right.
We get, you know, all of the wide receivers and tight ends on one day, all of the defensive linemen on another day. A chance to, you know, to at least get a sense of these guys' personalities a little bit, how they handle the media, but also maybe you get a little personal story and anecdote that you didn't know about these guys before. And that part of it is always kind of interesting, because it's at least a little bit less hype and a little bit more personal.
And obviously everyone's being really cautious with what they say. They want to leave a good impression. But as you said, Mike, you do get an idea for what kind of people these players are, what their personality is like, and how it might translate. I mean, you go back to look at a lot of these guys the Packers drafted last year, and you know, Kenny Clark and just how they present themselves.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that started here. I mean, when you listen to Mike McCarthy, you talk about, you know, them, their interviews when they were in the pre-draft process. They walked away impressed with a lot of these guys. I think Ty Montgomery falls in that same equation 2 years ago. So certainly, as you try to make an impression, this is the first way to do it, and really, in a long way, the lasting impression that you make.
Yeah, and a lot of the key things here, the medical checkups, the personal interviews with the teams, don't really get the media coverage, but they are really the heart and soul, the crux of what's going on here. The 40-yard dash times and whatnot will get all the attention on television, but there's a lot more that goes on behind the scenes as well. But with that, we're going to throw it to a break, and we'll be back with more from the Scouting Combine right after this. welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford and Wes Hodkiewicz from Packers.com at the NFL Scouting Combine in downtown Indianapolis. Now, Wes, we'll step aside just for a second from the prospects and the draft aspect of this. One of the things that goes on a lot here at the Combine is free agency talk, because agents are here, general managers are here, salary cap guys are here. A lot of discussions, negotiations going on behind the scenes. And the Packers have a pretty good handful of pending free agents here. We don't know necessarily who the Packers' priorities are, but we know that some discussions are going to be happening here in Indianapolis and some decisions being made on Green Bay Packers very soon.
Yeah, one thing that you have to remember, too, in addition to having the scouting combine in Indianapolis, you also have, we were talking to a couple of the Packer trainers, they had their meetings yesterday. The NFLPA agency has their meeting as well. So all the agents, they're in Indianapolis as well. So this really is, in a lot of times, the meeting point for a lot of those conversations and when things can really, really get started. I mean, I think Mason Crosby's deal last year, a lot of that groundwork was laid here in Indianapolis.
Absolutely.
They ended up signing him, I think it was in a few days after it. So there's a lot of things at stake. But at the same time, it adds another level to it this year, Mike, with the fact that the scouting combine was actually pushed back a little bit closer to free agency, which begins next week. So, yeah, those are talks. You can imagine they're going to intensify now with those days and deadlines approaching. That always makes people move a little bit faster.
Definitely. Now, the Packers have 11 pending unrestricted free agents and 2 restricted free agents. As I said, we don't know necessarily who the Packers' priorities are, but if I were to pick 5 guys that are generating the most discussion amongst the fan base, in no particular order, you'd have Eddie Lacy, TJ Lang on offense, Nick Perry and Micah Hyde on defense, and also Jared Cook at tight end on offense. Those would be the 5 guys that I would point to that are generating the most discussion, maybe some angst amongst the fan base as to exactly what is going to go on here. And as you mentioned, with the combine being pushed back a week right up against free agency, which begins next week, there's a 2-day negotiating window from March 7th to March 9th in which free agents who are not under contract can talk to other teams and begin negotiating with other teams. And then free agency, actually the doors get blown open, so to speak, on Wednesday the 9th. So I think with the way this schedule works out, I think we're setting up to have a really sort of frantic, frenetic 2-day negotiating window next week from March 7th to March 9th, because things are just getting started now with a lot of discussions.
Yeah, and you know, agents and their players, they obviously have an idea of what their market's going to be. They'll get a feel for what the teams are thinking, the teams that currently control their rights. And then when that negotiating window opens up, as it's shown the last 2 or 3 years, that's where a lot of deals get done. I mean, that's where Brian Bulaga and Randall Cobb both ended up finding agreements, even though through that whole month before that, it really wasn't sure which direction it was going to go. But at the same time, Mike, one of the things that's interesting too about this year is that when the Packers do have upwards of 10 guys that are going to be UFA or unrestricted free agents, seeing exactly how all those cards shuffle out, I mean, there's a lot of very talented guys that they're going to have to make decisions on. And I know so many times people want to point towards external free agency, and certainly that'll take its course here in the next couple weeks. But a lot of times the biggest things that happen during this process are what happens the days before you get started, not only in Green Bay, but the rest of the NFL as well. So keeping an eye on that is really going to be one of the biggest things. I think it's going to be a telltale sign of how your offseason goes.
Yeah, now I mentioned those 5 guys that are maybe generating the most discussion amongst the fan base. And we don't necessarily know who the Packers are targeting here and whose agents they're talking to here while they're in Indianapolis. But if you were to look at the Packers roster and where things sit, give us your thoughts on maybe one of those 5 guys.
Well, Jared Cook's the most intriguing just because of how his season played out. He was an outside free agent signing. I think the Packers, when you look at Ted Thompson's record, when they have delved into that side of things, they've been very successful with Julius Peppers, Latroy Guyon, Charles Woodson, Ryan Pickett. The list goes on and on. They're batting a pretty high percentage when it comes to that, and Cook was no exception. Now, mind you, he did end up missing 6 games, 7 weeks with that ankle injury that he developed against Detroit. But right around that time, Mike, in week 3, we were finally starting to see how he fit into this offense, what he looked like, and then once he got back in, hit the ground running with a big game against Washington, and really only progressed after that. So we'll see exactly, like you said, where things fall out with Cook and how it ends up playing out in these coming days. But certainly, I think you can't argue with the impact he made on this offense.
Yeah, I put a lot of stock in what Aaron Rodgers had to say, and he had it. He said it throughout the 8-game winning streak and after the season was over and whatnot, of the impact that Cook made that Washington game when he came back from the injury. That became the final loss of the 4-game losing streak, but that was where the offense turned the corner. Right. They became a different unit offensively with him on the field regularly. I think that was hard to deny.
It was, and also when you look at the playoffs, I mean, the catch against Dallas is going to be talked about for years and years to come, just showing how he stepped up when they didn't have Randall Cobb, when they needed to rely on other players, even when they lost, you know, Jordy Nelson against the New York Giants to that, you know, the rib injury. So a lot of things there to consider, and certainly he gives you a multifaceted threat that isn't just quantified by the tight end position.
Yeah, now another guy that's certainly worth talking about, and I take nothing away from the impact that Eddie Lacy might make in the running game, the leadership of T.J. Lang on the offensive line. But Nick Perry, as a pass rusher, he's coming off the best season of his career. He still wasn't totally healthy throughout the 2016 season, but he posted 11 sacks. That's almost half of his career total for a guy who'd been really in and out of the lineup with injuries for the most part through the first four seasons of his career. His market, so to speak, and what his value will be on the free agent market is going to be very interesting, because we've seen so many pass rushers now around the league getting the franchise tag. They're essentially being taken off the market by their teams. That has somewhat elevated the stock of Nick Perry, you might say, in terms of the availability of proven pass rushers. The Packers are going to have a very, very big decision to make on Nick Perry.
Yeah, and it's funny because you talk about, you know, Jerry Jones and the comment of him wanting a war daddy pass rusher. Every team does, because they're in short supply. You're not always going to be able to find those guys in any given year. Everything has to line up, and for Nick Perry, it finally did in 2016. I think we'd seen the spurts of it throughout his career. You go back to 2013 when Clay Matthews broke his thumb. Nick Perry has to step up against Baltimore, gets two sacks, but then suffers a foot injury of his own. It just seemed like every time he'd finally been starting to maybe get over that hump, something came up. And yeah, he did break his hand this year. That was something he had to play through with the club. But with the 52 tackles as well, is something I don't think often gets talked about enough. As an outside linebacker, how productive he was, not only against the pass, but also against the run. A very, very efficient player. And again, we'll have to see exactly how his market shapes up considering that injury history.
Yeah, and with the Packers also on defense, Micah Hyde had a huge impact in the defensive backfield down the stretch. And again, getting back to pass rushers, Julius Peppers, we don't necessarily know the future for him. If he's going to continue playing, will that be in Green Bay or elsewhere? A lot of questions to be answered. But for now, we're going to throw it to a break, and we'll be back with more on Packers on Scripted from the Scouting Combine right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford and Wes Hodkiewicz here from the 2017 NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. And Wes, one topic that has been something worth discussing that we haven't really talked about in depth on the show from the offseason is wide receiver Jordy Nelson awarded the Associated Press Comeback Player of the Year Award for 2016. He actually won multiple Comeback Player of the Year Awards from different outlets, but on that NFL Honors Show, the night before the Super Bowl, he's presented with that award, and couldn't think of a guy more deserving of it, really.
No, I mean, obviously no disrespect to Le'Veon Bell, Cameron Wake, a lot of guys that overcame injuries and different things throughout the course of the 2016 season to bounce back, but I think Jordy Nelson was hands down the unanimous guy to go for. I mean, you just look at his numbers, Mike, what he was able to do. ACL injuries are tricky, and sometimes when guys have those, especially once you hit that 30-year-old mark, it's not always easy to come back and find a way to play at that level that you always did. Well, you look at Jordy Nelson, he almost put up the numbers we were always accustomed to seeing. He led the league in touchdowns with 14, 97 receptions, over 1,200 receiving yards. This offense was different when he was on the field, and when he was there for the Packers throughout the course of the season, you could tell Aaron Rodgers, this offense, everything moved a little bit more efficiently.
Yeah, I thought it was quite impressive what Nelson was able to do in terms of, at the end of the day, in 2016, he put up statistics and numbers that essentially mirrored his 2014 season,
incredible,
which was really a career year for him, and why him missing the season in 2015 was so devastating to the offense, because he'd been so productive. Now, 2016 went differently for him, though, than 2014. I think we saw in 2014 he was making the big plays, the big catches down the field right from the get-go. That didn't happen in 2016 because he essentially missed all of training camp, all of the preseason. He was just getting his feet under him again in the early stages of 2016. And then towards the second half of the season, we saw the big plays start to come back, the big chunks of yardage, the big stuff down the field. And that's, again, as we talked about with Jared Cook also on the field, when Jordy Nelson really got back to being the Jordy Nelson of old, this Packer offense started to look a little more familiar to
us. Well, what's really impressive, Mike, about Jordy Nelson, and he did this even before the knee injury as well, is how versatile he can be. You can use him in the slot. You can use him outside. There was really an element of surprise involved with how the Packers deployed him throughout the course of the year. And, yeah, when they didn't have Randall Cobb for a couple weeks, Nelson was in the slot more. I mean, they're able to do those sort of things with him because of his size, because of his versatility, and because of what he can do in all portions of the field. The one thing that is kind of tough, he did have the rib injury. I still contest if he didn't have that. My guess is he probably does get a Pro Bowl nod. He was the first alternate for that, but because he does have the injury, doesn't get to go. But he put together a Pro Bowl season no matter what you say. And obviously, winning the NFL Comeback of the Year honors, giving also an acknowledgement to the Packers training staff for helping him get to that point. This was a meaningful honor for him. You could definitely tell that.
And a tip of the cap to Nelson, too, as we talked about after the NFC Championship. But going out there after missing just the one game with the broken ribs, playing with the extra padding, making catches early in the game to try to get the Packers offense going, what he contributed, that warrior mentality that we talked about with several players throughout the 2016 season. But Jordy Nelson just epitomized it in that title game.
Absolutely, Mike. And I know there were so many different things being reported about, oh, he's going to be doing this, he's going to wear a bulletproof vest or whatever. He wore like a quarterback flak jacket.
Yeah.
I mean, it really wasn't that much more. He basically had shoulder pads around his abdomen. That was it. So when he got hit, he was going to feel it.
Yeah.
But that, he wanted to do whatever he could do to get back. And I think we wrote about during that whole run, he'd worked so long, so hard to get back on the field, he wasn't going to let a rib injury stop him from being there in the playoffs.
Yeah, and Nelson, as we know, the most veteran member of the Packers receiving corps. A couple of guys to keep an eye on for 2017, though, young guys. Trevor Davis, a fifth-round draft pick last year. Geronimo Allison, an undrafted rookie who started to make his mark a little bit. I think the evolution of this Packers wide receiving corps is going to be interesting to watch as we go along.
It is, because it's just so multifaceted, and everybody's coming back. I mean, with Randall Cobb and Devontae Adams locked up for another year, I mean, this is going to be a lot of different weapons. It just is a question now of if Jared Cook fits back into that equation.
For sure. Well, with that, we'll throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted from the NFL Scouting Combine right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford and Wes Hodkiewicz coming to you from the Scouting Combine in downtown Indianapolis. And Wes, a little bit of Packers coaching staff news to talk about here that we found out a few days ago. A little bit of shuffling around, you might say. David Rye, assistant offensive line coach, promoted to offensive perimeter coach. And I think as the week goes along, we'll get a little bit better sense from Mike McCarthy exactly what that means. But McCarthy talks about the perimeter group being the running backs, the wide receivers, the tight ends, almost as though David Rye will be a guy who will work with all of those groups in some capacity along with their individual position coaches.
Yeah, I mean, David Rye, who was a quarterback by trade, if you go back to his days at Iowa, has really, really diversified his skill set here since he's been in Green Bay. He started off as an offense, or I should say as the coaching administrator with the Packers 2 years ago. Him and Luke Getsy both applied for the offensive quality control job. The Packers walked away impressed with both of them and made a job for both of them. But since then has spent a lot of time with James Campen on the offensive line, Mike Solari when he was here working as the number three in that room, and now gets another opportunity. And I think this says a lot about him and exactly what the Packers think about his upside. We remember talking to him last year when he had his introduction as the assistant offensive line coach, a very gregarious guy, very extroverted guy. You can see that. I think he used to work at I believe it was medical sales. I mean, just kind of has an infectious personality. And you can also tell, I mean, I know talking to some of the offensive linemen over the last year, a lot of respect there for him as well and in his work with James Campen. So now getting a new job opportunity here, him and Luke Getsy, depending on how much those two are going to be intertwined, obviously have a good relationship and have really come up together through the ranks at, you know, in Green Bay at the same time. And this is the way the Packers do it. They like to give their coaches a lot of different exposure to different position groups to really round them out and, you know, make him an all-around, all-encompassing coach.
Yeah, I really like Rye's personality in the sense that I bumped into him one right after the Week 17 victory over the Detroit Lions, and he's like, hey, 20 teams are at home, and we're one of 12 teams still playing. I mean, that's just the way this guy is all the time, and you can't help but get caught up in it. He's a really fun guy to be around, a fun guy to talk to. Now, his replacement as assistant offensive line coach is Jeff Blasco, and interestingly, he's following now the same coaching path as Rye, starting as coaching administrator and now moving into the assistant offensive line position under James Campen. James Campen's had a lot of different assistants who have worked with him.
He really has.
But credit to Campen, that offensive line really stays together and is always one of those solid groups on this ball club.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at Campen, his track record here with his offensive linemen and his coaches and how he's been a part of this thing. I mean, one of the longest tenured coaches on staff. I think he was there since 2003, I want to say.
That sounds right.
Starting off as an assistant to Joe Philbin in that capacity, and now really taking charge of one of the top offensive lines in the NFL. In Blasco, you look at him, he came in last year as coaching administrator, worked a lot with Brian Angelico in the tight ends, now getting a chance to get some exposure with the offensive linemen, so a nice promotion for him to be able to see exactly what he can do and also working up and trying to continue that coaching tree that the Packers have developed.
And the other coaching change, aside from the departure of Tom Clements, which we talked about right after the season was over, but Tim McGargle hired as the defensive quality control coach, E.J. Evereaux leaving, getting a position job in the defensive backfield with the Los Angeles Rams. So a new face in the on the defensive coaching side of things. And those quality control jobs a lot of times are just the start, and you see where a guy's career might go.
Yeah, the Packers actually have done a pretty good job of pulling guys out of the college ranks. McGargle, who is most recently for Lovie Smith, the linebackers coach at Illinois. Jerry Montgomery came on board 2 years ago now from Oklahoma as a co-defensive coordinator and works as a defensive front assistant for the Packers. So that's what they try to go for here. I mean, they try to find guys that could add something new. And when you do lose Evereaux, trying to find someone that could come in and help. And obviously with his background as a linebackers coach, could lie some assistance there with Scott McClurley.
Yeah, so the Packers have their coaching staff set for 2017, and we will call that a wrap on our first edition of Packers Unscripted from the Scouting Combine, but we'll be here all week, the rest of this week, from Indianapolis. With that, Mike Spofford and Wes Hodkowitz from Packers.com. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on the website. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hod. I'm at Mike Spofford. Thanks for tuning in, everybody, and we will see you next time.